Welcome to the 63rd Monkey on My Back podcast. Contact us at momcast@gmail.com and leave us comments or contributions. Tonight on the pod, we, some comics. Momcast. Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these idiots from the swift completion of their appointed podcast ramblings. Well, maybe snow. Around the mics tonight are...
Hey, welcome. Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Nick, and we aren't in the same room this time. We are once again remote.
We're on opposite sides of Southampton. Well, yes. Not quite opposite.
Nearly. It counts as practically opposite. The proper bit of Southampton, not including all of those extraneous bits.
That's correct. You're on the other side of the glacier. Took me this week.
Yeah. Yes. Because this week. We have been snowed under.
We've been snowed right up to the ankles.
Yeah, there was as much as 2, maybe 3 inches of snow.
Maybe in places where it drifted as much as 4.
here in Southampton, and that's why Jane isn't with us, isn't it? I mean, you spoke to her most recently, but
she is. She's apparently in a snowman. I think probably what happened is she's collapsed somewhere on the way home in a drunken stupor, and some children have probably taken it upon themselves to build a snowman around her.
Mm.
Which luckily hasn't stopped her using her iPhone, which is fortunate.
But well, that's good.
I think it serves her right for taking that hip flask to work all the time.
Yeah, I was going to, because you two were at work today, not pronouncing things properly. And I actually wasn't allowed to go because my place was closed. But so she's still drinking at work then?
That's right, yeah, fortunately. She can't help it. She does it to forget, I think.
But there was that intervention. We went to so much trouble.
I know, but she's totally fallen off that wagon, mate.
Oh, that sucks. What's she trying to forget?
Just everything. She's trying to forget... the snowman brutality that she's had to face over the years. I don't know. It's hard to tell. She keeps it all inside and just relies on the booze to numb the pain.
She does. She keeps it all in.
Yeah.
I really think the different activities she used to get up to each week, I mean, obviously she was sublimating the pain in some way, but it did keep her off the source, didn't it? While she was doing all that zombie stuff.
Yeah, but now, yeah, she's regressed. So, yeah, she's in snowman rehab, I guess.
We should just leave it there till it thaws out, which will probably be tomorrow
or Saturday at the worst. So yeah, she should
Do we know if there's going to be snow? Is it still all going to be there tomorrow? Am I going to get another day off work?
It's going to be very icy. It'll probably be more dangerous for you tomorrow to go to work than it was today.
Oh well, that's good news.
It'll be all slippy.
So hopefully I won't have to go. That'll be good. So this also meant we couldn't go into town and get comics, didn't it?
That's right, because it's very dangerous in town, apparently, and we're big lady men.
It is very dangerous in town. They let other people go there, and other people are a bit scary.
Well, to be honest with you, it's other people that ruin the snow, because if it was just me that was allowed to walk in it, it'd still be quite deep and crunchy and nice to walk in, but it's other people walking about in it, compacts it down and turns it into ice. It's really inconvenient.
Making a mess.
Bastards.
Being silly. I was sat in here at about midnight last night looking out, and there was a lad who I think was trying to build a snow ramp. Like I say, a lad, a student, out in the middle of the night trying to build a ramp made of snow. I don't know where he was planning on jumping to, but it was in the middle of the road. I thought, that's dangerous, that.
Blimey. It must have been a bit of a crazy night. We had an altercation in our street last night. There were people having an altercation. It was quite unpleasant.
with, what, like a domestic that spilled out onto the street?
Yes, yeah, there was something like that. There was a man banging on a door and saying, would you mind opening up, you awful sex worker, you? It was not good.
That isn't good. Was he throwing snowballs at the windows, or...?
We couldn't work out, because then it sounded like the person he had accused of being an awful sex worker was outside with him as well. At one point, banging on the door, so it was quite an unpleasant scene.
Maybe there were two sex workers.
Maybe there were two sex workers. It's possible. Maybe there's a whole bunch of them. No, I doubt it. I'm not painting my road in a very good light here, am I?
You live in quite a scary area, so we couldn't be more middle class here. Even the students are a bit posh.
I noticed that. They wear very nice tracksuits.
Yeah. Actually, that's not true. I think the whole area started going down a little bit when we moved in.
I think so.
I don't know if that...
I heard your neighbour mutter something about the house price dropping after he saw you moving or something.
Yeah.
In a kind of 1970s horrible sitcom kind of way.
It's because I'm a bit Greek.
Exactly.
They don't brook foreigners around here. It's terrible. I'm just going to close this document down. I found this document on my computer after my wife was using it earlier today, because she was snowed in as well.
Okay.
And it's a Word document. that says romantic love conceptualized as an attack. You're right there.
Yeah, I coughed. I'm sorry. I thought I was being really sly about it.
No, you weren't.
Okay.
Romantic love conceptualized as an attachment process. Hazan and Shaver, 1987. My wife does like a quite a clever job. She teaches psychology, and I don't have a clue what that's all about. I don't know who Hazan and Shaver are either.
I didn't even recognise 60% of what you said as words.
Romantic love, James. You know romantic love.
Sorry. I don't I don't know what you mean.
Remember when I came into your hotel room
and
thought bubble?
That was pure lust.
Oh, okay. Actually, that's something that's worth... I'm sure that all of our listeners probably follow us on Twitter, so they already know this, but I have been posting video of Thought Bubble on YouTube, so they should go and have a look. That would be fun.
Yes, thank you very much for doing those. You worked very hard on them. They made me laugh.
That's essentially us laughing at ourselves.
Yeah, but that's okay. I didn't put the videos together, so it's fine for me to laugh at myself and others.
In fact, one of the videos, there is a point where a video starts with me filming you, listening to us on the Momcast, and you commenting on it, and now we're talking about it now, with you laughing at it.
Yeah.
It's all getting a bit confusing,
frankly. I like the bit where I say I don't like this podcast, because it's mostly true.
I'm not really surprised. One friend of mine did say, "Oh, cute! You recorded yourselves on a train to somewhere. What are you, 12?" Which I thought was quite sweet.
Really? That's very nice.
Yeah.
Are you able to name and shame them, as they were so cruel on the?
It was Brigine.
Oh.
It was Brigine who writes for the for Elephant Words. So she's right though. She's entirely right.
Was she the person I met at Thought Bubble that was a little bit scared of me at first?
She was a little bit scared. That's because she's very small and you're like a giant.
Yeah, I'm 8 foot.
Yeah, you are. You are the biggest man I've ever met. That's not entirely true. You are exactly the same size as the two other biggest men I have met.
Yes.
You're all exactly the same height.
Remarkably, you attract us. You're a bear attractant. You're like a cub.
I am, that's exactly what I am.
You're bare nip.
So, James, what are we going to talk about tonight?
I don't know, I thought I'd not talk about Batman, didn't I, for a long time. And then I thought, well, I've got about half a dozen Batman books set in front of me.
Well, go on.
And it's probably worth talking about now the Batman Incorporated series has started. There's a brand new creative team on Detective Comics. Batman and Robin has a new creative team on it, and there's various one-shots and an excellent Tony Daniel Batman. It's probably worth talking about.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? You decided you weren't going to talk about Batman at roughly the same time as about a third of the comics on the shelf became Batman.
That's right. So I should probably get this over in one splurge, shouldn't I?
One giant Batman-related...
Spunk off.
spunk off.
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I like talking about Batman anyway, and Jane's not here, so we can geek out as much as we like. She keeps us a little bit under control, doesn't she?
She does. She forces us to.
Forces us to what? I don't know. Like this.
Do something or other. Yay, that was the first uncomfortable Skype pause. Yay!
I think it's probably quite worrying for anyone listening that the way we normally are is us being less geek because Jane's in the room.
Do you think we're being we're machoing up, do you think? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe. We're sort of puffing our chests out because there's a girl in the room.
I'm doing that right now, but it's only because I've still got an awful cough. I'm puffing it out to ease the pressure.
You poor thingy.
I'm still not very well, you know. I got rid of the worst of the cold, but I'm still feeling quite grotty, Nick.
Oh, that sucks.
And it's not very interesting.
No, it isn't. Did that come across?
It did, yeah. Would you like me to talk about Batman a little bit?
I can't think of anything I'd like more.
Really?
Yeah, I've got to read my copy of New Mutants from last week. So.
Oh, fair enough. Well, you
so on you go.
Yeah, you carry on, mate. Put your feet up. As I say, there's several at the moment. The most notable of which, I think, for me, is probably Batman Incorporated. It's Grant Morrison, Yannick Paquette on writing and art, respectively. And for me, I think Incorporated kind of takes up where he left off with kind of the spirit of his Batman and Robin run. Mm-hmm. I think of the books that feature the new, I don't know, reimagined, slightly rebooted Batman universe.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like it's going to be the most rip-roaring and joyous. It had a real sort of, I don't know, a sort of Saturday morning cartoon frenetic quality about it. It's sort of almost like it's tapping into the best of the 60s Batman TV series in terms of the sort of, it's just riotous fun, you know?
What is the setup? Because my first instinct when I hear you say Batman Inc., and I've heard you talk about it a little bit, and heard other people talk about it as well, is that it sounds like it's the only one of the Batman books that isn't kind of either a continuation of or a replacement for an existing title.
The others
each focus on a character who already exists and has maybe already had their own title, with the exception of Batwoman, which I guess there hasn't been a regular title for wherever, probably. But I don't have a clue what Batman Inc. It sounds like it would be almost like a team book or something completely new.
It's kind of not. Well, I mean, this is Bruce Wayne's book. I think essentially like it's going to follow him around the world, setting up these series of essentially franchise Batmen.
Right.
And this first one centres on him travelling to Tokyo with Catwoman. And he
a good travel partner, really.
Absolutely, Catwoman. And she's drawn in bumptious manner. In this.
What does bumptious mean?
She's quite busty, particularly like, busty in this.
Like a carry-on lady.
She very much like a carry-on Catwoman.
Excellent. Okay.
And essentially, they travel to Japan to set up the Japanese franchise, whereby they fall. They come across a dastardly villain who's tried to take out the guy that Batman had earmarked to become the Japanese Batman. I can't remember the dude's name. Is it Mr. Unknown? Oh, no, it's Mr. Unknown who he goes to visit. Sorry, I forget the villain's name, I'm afraid. But it's got a lovely, fantastic sort of... very much like the cliffhanger endings of the two-part Batman series from the 60s. It's got that sort of shtick at the end as well. It just goes at 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic book, to be honest with you. It's good fun. There's depth to the story as well, so it's not just complete candy floss thrown at the page either. I mean, there's always a reasonable amount of thought, I think, to Morrison's writing, and certainly I think the Batman Incorporated storyline is going to be quite... it's probably going to be the epic of this particular bunch, as it works towards, I think, a culminating storyline in a year's time. I think the reason he's setting up this Batman franchise is there's some sinister shadow in the far off future that he needs, I don't know, obviously a shitload of Batman to help him out with.
Presumably not the far off future to the extent that he travelled to.
No, I'm sorry.
Which is the end of time, isn't it?
I think. No, I think 12 months.
Midterm, roughly 12 months.
Yeah,
as opposed to at the end of time.
That's right. I would suspect it'll probably coincide with the end of Scott Snyder's Detective Comic run. I wouldn't be surprised.
Is it fair to say that Bruce Wayne is maybe a little bit more, even though he's got a mission, is maybe a little bit more laid back? I've only read a couple of bits of dialogue, but I'm pretty sure I've seen Bruce Wayne smiling.
He has. He kind of is, and he's a little more freewheeling.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say. I mean, he's still, he turns up in the Gotham-based books that will feature Dick Grayson's Batman more heavily, and he still casts a very dark, brooding shadow in that. But yeah. I mean, he certainly has got a slightly more carefree, freewheeling vibe than he had before. I think that's fair to say.
I've got to read the Return of Return of Bruce Wayne, the six. Yeah.
Oh, the six parts.
Six parts. Yeah. I need to read that because I think I'm a bit confused in my head. He's lived the whole length of time, but that isn't actually what happened, is it? He was jumping through time.
It was, yeah, a bit Quantum Leap style.
Quantum Leap style, brilliant. I love Quantum Leap.
Oh boy.
That's my sometimes
man being Sam Beckett.
Sometimes I look in the mirror, and or I'll have a moment at work where I like to pretend that I'm somebody else who's just leaped into my body and is finding themselves sitting in an office at work or something. And then it takes a few seconds for me to go, oh boy, establish exactly what the situation is. In Quantum Leap, it normally took him a little while to establish what his situation was, but funnily enough, my life always seems quite straightforward for him to pick up. Oh, okay, I'm sitting in an office.
I'll press this, no one will notice.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
I always assumed that possibly it was some sort of dissociative disorder I had, but do other people do that as well?
Yeah, I think we all have that same horrible disembodied feeling of, I don't know, it's almost like unpleasant sort of dawning of reality, isn't it? Oh, God. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. What am I doing? I've got earphones on, there's a guy talking to me into the earphones. There's a computer. I don't know. What am I doing here? This is confusing. What's my mission?
I most frequently get that when I'm forced to go to meetings for work, which is a rather disconcerting sensation.
I don't know. I don't understand what anyone's talking about. I don't understand what I'm supposed to be saying. Am I supposed to have an opinion on this? That's pretty much my entire experience of meetings, actually.
I've always said, if all else fails with meetings, I've always said that my final default is, if it's going really badly, I am just going to stand up and strip.
I always assume that if it's going really badly, it's probably me who's supposed to be running the meeting, but I just haven't realised. We have actually got, this isn't me segueing into playing it, but you know how we love how Max talks?
Yes.
How he communicates?
Yes.
He sent us an email, which I suspect the email is just explaining something that he says in the contribution, and it feels almost as if it's a direct continuation of him justifying something that he's just said in it. It's brilliant. So we'll listen to that later on.
I wish I thought about my reviews as much as he does his.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I wish you did as well. No, that's not true. You actually write stuff down. I don't even do that.
Not today, I haven't. I'm with Britain.
All of our reviews, I think, you can sort of hear us thumbing through the pages to try and work out what the names of the main characters and stuff are. So.
It's all right. Do you know, I'm sitting here frantically flicking through the one-shot Batman The Return, trying to remember what the fucking hell happened in the story, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bat, there was a vampire dude, Bruce Wayne got to meet everyone again. Stuff happened. That was that one.
This is why I really like that you really liked Batman Inc. Because it has felt recently like a little bit like the books are kind of had been leaving you a bit cold. Or not cold, but just a little bit high and dry. Like, there's lots of stuff happening, but there's no real, like,
I think
story to it, if that makes sense.
I think it was, what do they call it, event fatigue?
Yeah.
I was just getting fed up with the whole Bruce Wayne the Return thing and wanted it all to end and just start telling some stories in a stable continuity again, to be honest.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it. I'm loving the Batman books again. I don't think I really put it across. I loved Batman Incorporated.
Mm.
It's just an absolute... It's not often I put a book down and I'm like, oh my God. You know, I really enjoyed that. It's like a real breath of fresh air.
Mm.
Absolutely lovely. We're very lucky. As I say, Batman the Return, the one shot, although I kind of forget the story now because it's a couple of weeks when I read it. The art's lovely and that was thoroughly enjoyable. And it's just Grant Morrison telling some really fun superhero tales again, you know? He writes a good Batman, I think.
I think when he writes well, he writes so well anyway. Yeah. I just, every time you talk about him on Batman, I always kind of think I need to take a few hours aside and just sit and read The Invisibles from beginning to end again or something like that. Because that's some good shit right there.
Oh, when he's having fun, you can totally tell, can't you, with Morrison. Sorry, go
on. No, that's it. I was just going,
So there's a few more out at the moment. Batman, the book itself, is written, drawn, coloured, printed, stapled, posted through your door by Tony Daniel.
He did the whole thing? He did all of that?
Absolutely everything. It's just, his is the only name apart from Batman's on the cover. And this follows Dick. It's a tale involving Catgirl, Katrina Falcone, trying to take down a Reaper. She's trying to take him down to claim a reward. This is kind of it's a Batman mystery. You know, there's a strange woman in town that's trying to buy parts of Crime Alley from Wayne's, who turns out is more than she first appears to be. It's just good fun. There's a little bit of interplay between Dick and Bruce, and also some enjoyable dialogue between Dick and Damien, which is always good. I really enjoy their relationship that Morrison established in Batman and Robin. I think Tony Daniel does a decent job with that relationship as well.
You have to work pretty hard to get a character to relate to Damien, don't you? You have to be doing a pretty good job, because he's quite a harsh character.
He is. He's a tough character to write.
But is that done in one story?
No, it's not. No, this is a continuing story, which is fantastic. I really like Tony Daniel's Batman. There's some lovely art in there. Really a classic Daniel Batman one-page splash as well towards the end, with him sat on gargoyles, grimacing as he's about to leap on someone. Some really fantastic, lovely artwork in there.
She'll have to. Well, I'll try and have a look. I've never really gotten on very well with Tony Daniel, it has to be said. But I think it's because I vaguely resent him coming out of nowhere the way he did in the 90s.
Sure.
I didn't know who he was, and he was one of those artists that got massively fan popular. But at that point, I didn't think he was that good. He was just very stylized. People like Joe Madureira and people like that who came out of that same thing as well. And I think I've always kind of begrudged him for it. I've got a long memory for this stuff.
You have.
You know, I don't ever really forgive people for showing me up as not having my finger on the pulse, I think.
I think he does a good Batman. So there, right?
He's working with Grant Morrison, so some of that's going to rub off anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Fantastic effort. Well done. I give him 4 out of 5 stars.
Fantastic effort. All of the lads done really well there.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Well done. It was a book of two halves. and at the end of the day, we all went home and it was good.
At this point, were there any other Batman books?
There are. Sorry, I've got a couple more.
No, it's cool. Go ahead. I'll just sit here.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
This is where we're going to have the conversation where we say, "Oh, God, we've got enough to just be a short one tonight." And we end up rattling on so long about something
that it'll be 10 o'clock by the time we finish.
It's twice as long as it normally is because we're being a little bit too loosey-goosey.
Loosey-goosey.
Batman and Robin, I thought was coming to an end, but it's, I think it's Peter J. Tomasi is going to be writing, or was meant to be writing on it at this point, but isn't at the moment. So I think they've had to drop in a short-term creative team on it, which is Paul Cornell, English writer, and Scott McDaniel.
Okay.
I don't know why I just billed him as English writer.
English writer Paul Cornell.
English writer, gentleman, and cricket fan Paul Cornell, and Scott McDaniel on art. This of the current Bat books, maybe the weakest, to be honest with you. It doesn't quite, but it's got so much good competition around it. It may well be satisfying taken in isolation. When you look at all the other Batman books around it at the moment, it kind of feels like the poor relation, which is a shame, because Batman and Robin was the really enjoyable, vibrant Batman book at the moment, and that's kind of really been heavily overshadowed, I think, by Incorporated.
If it was sort of a last minute replacement or something, I've found that the issue I had with Batman and Robin as a book was its slightly schizophrenic nature. On the one hand, it
went from light to dark very quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, and it became very quickly. I thought it was going to be one thing. The fact that it had the same team on it as All-Star Superman meant that it felt like it was going to be good comic yarns that, you know, had lots of thought put into them, but were essentially good comic yarns that stood alone. But then it ended up having to do some quite heavy lifting for the ongoing Is Batman Dead? Where Is Batman? Storyline.
Sure.
And for me, I sort of tuned out at roughly the point where it became clear that I didn't really know.
Yeah. That's
you know, that it felt like maybe they didn't know exactly what sort of a book they wanted it to be. And the idea of it being written by someone other than Grant Morrison just strikes me as peculiar anyway, because I thought it was like a showcase book for him anyway. So, I mean, again, maybe I'm being a bit
I agree. I think, I was under the impression it was going to end once Morrison finished writing on it, for precisely the same reason. That it felt very much like, it's exactly that, it was to showcase the new Batman team. This was all about Dick and Damian and really embedding those characters into the Batman continuity. And so I'm amazed it's been, I think this is a 3-month stopgap, and I don't know what the pressures were around getting the story out, but it's okay, but it's not as strong as the others.
There is a level at which, after All-Star Superman, that I would be happy with DC and Marvel just paying Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely loads and loads of money to do, I don't know how many issues All-Star Superman was, but, you know, do a 2-solid trade paperback run on various different characters. Don't worry about continuity, just do your version of them.
Yeah, totally.
Fill up 2 hardbacks, I would have a whole shelf just for their versions of different characters.
Oh, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
With no fill-in issues or anything, you know what I mean? I just think it'd be brilliant, but... But, you know, DC just handed Grant Morrison, obviously being handed pretty much the keys to the whole city, was a bigger draw for him than something like that.
Oh, well.
What else came out? What other Batman books?
The last one that I'm going to talk about is the one that I've been getting most excited about on the pod, and that's Scott Snyder. I don't know why I said this word.
Scott Snyder,
Jack, and Francesco Francavilla.
That's a new American accent you've got there. You've got like 3 now, I think.
I'm going to draw you a Batman. it's their run on Detective Comics.
Is it good? I'm really meant to pick that up. I don't know why I didn't. I got too excited about Batwoman. And
is it good?
Yeah.
In a word.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Oh, that's two words.
In a word, it's very
three
good.
Three syllables. It's four syllables. It's very three good. Three words, four
yeah,
syllables.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very good in a word. Yeah, absolutely. It's a slow rumbling. Oh, look, there's a baby behind me. It's going to bed. Nicola just poked me with the baby so I could say goodnight to it.
Just the whole baby.
Yeah, goodnight, Scarlett. Night-night. Or either that
night, Scarlett.
No, Nick says night-night. Either that or she's encouraging me not to shout so much. It's possible. I don't know.
Maybe she doesn't like your American... Maybe your American accent resonates with
her. I'm going to draw you a baby. It's a slow, broody rumbler of a comic book is what I think I was going to say.
I think so. You said rumble.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It just feels really broody and dark and a little bit claustrophobic. And it's good. I like it very much. It's sort of showing a dirty, gritty, grimy side of Gotham. Jock's pencils are outstanding. The colour work's brilliant as well. The palettes used to great effect, actually.
Who's colouring? He says as if he's an expert on colourist.
Francesco Francavalia.
Ah, you did say yes.
Yes, at the beginning. Let me just check. Or is he the... He's not the inker, is he? Am I getting it all wrong? I don't know, Jock.
Sorry,
no, David Barron. David Barron did the colours. What am I talking about?
Ooh, he's good.
Yeah. Yes, he is very good in this. I think Scott Snyder said it's going to be a dark, grimy, gritty detective story. And there's lots of strange happenings that occur, but I think the main bead that runs through the story is it's establishing Dick's relationship with Commissioner Gordon.
All right. Which
I don't know. I feel throughout the return of Bruce Wayne, the relationship between the two has been a little standoffish. Mm-hmm. So I think this feels like one of the undercurrents of the story, I guess, is going to be a developing relationship, I guess, between the two of them. Because obviously, Gordon doesn't have the same relationship with Grayson's Batman that he did with Bruce Wayne's, did he? So,
yeah, you know what? You've made me think of something there. And I don't know, again, because I don't read many of the Batman books, it's possible that I got completely the wrong impression. But what it felt like to me... when Batman wasn't there, when Bruce Wayne was dead, it felt like they had as long as it took him to get back to do some really interesting stories about everyone taking their places, and working out a new order.
Yeah,
but what it actually felt like in most of the books I read was that, although obviously the characters don't know it, it felt like the creators were all killing time, but they were all just fitting in around this story about him coming back. And, you say that his relationship with Commissioner Gordon was quite standoffish throughout that time, but I wonder if it's just that they didn't want to deal with that while they had all of this other stuff, you know, or the writers didn't want to deal with that while they had all of this other stuff going on?
Very possibly, and I guess the question mark that you want to leave there is Bruce going to come back or not? So maybe there's that uncertainty with the characters too, although that wasn't explicit in the books themselves, I don't think so.
Yeah.
In terms of that's why they weren't developing the relationships, I think it was obvious in several of the books that the characters were uncertain about what they should do until there was some certainty about Bruce, whether he was dead or was he still alive, sort of coping with what may have happened to him. But yeah, you're right. If it certainly feels with Detective Comics like Snyder has been let off the leash that's been there for most of the writers because of the constraints that Morrison's arc had put on them.
Yeah. And that's one of the main things that bothers me about event books, I think, although I'm literally only realising it as we talk now, is I don't like... Well, I get distracted when I read or watch anything where I can feel what the writer's having to do.
Sure.
You know, where you're aware of that, where you're aware that the writer is doing some work there. And certainly with some of the Batman books. But, you know, with any big crossover that actually doesn't seem to, you know, sort of maybe leaves me cold. They leave me cold when I can see the gears, I can see them putting characters into place, and I'm thinking about, oh, they're obviously doing that because they need this to happen and stuff like that, and I think that's maybe happened there a little bit. But, I mean, the other thing is, you said about this book, and obviously I haven't read it, but I think Jock works best when it's with writers who kind of pace things out, and you're saying about him doing quite the story being quite brooding.
Yeah.
I think his style would work beautifully for that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely it does. Gives it a lovely noir feel.
Mm. Sometimes I felt with his run on Detective that as lovely as the art was, if there was too much going on in a story, Jock's style isn't always the best. To get it across, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad that he's working out really well on that, because the idea of him doing a really good Batman book is just sort of, it's like he's perfect for it, you know.
The story, I totally agree. The story itself is intriguing. It's of the chemical compound that converted Killer Croc into his current form.
Mm-hmm.
Is found on a school kid who we see in the first few panels attack one of his schoolmates in a horrific manner in a school swimming pool. So the detective story that's running through the comic is the question about why is this compound being discovered, who's given it to these school kids, where have they gotten it from, which is quite interesting. But hung on that the stories of about Gordon and Dick's relationship, as well as a few little I don't know what you'd call them, these little bits turn up, like the vultures. There's vultures outside Dick's apartment.
Uh-huh.
And birds are kind of like a theme that run through the book as well, you know, which is, so I guess there's a few sort of thematic bits and bobs that he set bits and bobs. That's a good. There's a few thematic.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, there's a few thematic bits and bobs that he's setting up throughout the book. But birds do play a heavy role. They keep appearing, you know, every few pages in various panels quite prominently. You know, so you know they're obviously meant to be, and obviously, not obviously if you haven't read it, but play a very important part towards the end. You know, when something happens to one of the characters.
Does something happen to one of the characters? I always like it when that happens near the end.
Something happens to one of the characters. It often happens in sequential stories. I'm going to have to start writing this shit down like Max does.
No, that was beautiful. I think that was good. It had never occurred to me before, or maybe it has and I've just forgotten. But that while Batman is a bat, obviously, there's kind of this bird thing going on around Dick Grayson anyway.
Yeah.
Because he went from being Robin to being Nightwing.
Yeah, that's true.
And actually, you wouldn't ever actually see a bat and a Robin, would you?
Do you know, your voice went so high-pitched then, I actually thought we'd got a cross line for a second. I don't know whether it sort of happened at a point where, you know, on Skype you get the funny sort of sound anomalies.
Yeah, people turn into robots.
That's it. I think you went slightly high-pitched at the same point. I got a little funny little sound anomaly from Skype. It was quite shocking. I'm glad I told you about it.
Oh, what happened then? Did you just go really, really near to the mic?
No, I didn't. I didn't move at all.
It sounds like you're whispering in my ear. Well,
really?
Not whispering, kind of just talking really deeply. I like it.
That's quite exciting. Before I finish on this, sorry, just to highlight what I was saying about Grayson and Gordon's relationship. There's a lovely bit of dialogue between the two of them, and it involves them. They're on the roof of the Gotham City Police Department, and Gordon is talking to Batman while turning off the bat signal. Finish their conversation, and Gordon turns up to look in Batman's direction. He says, "Is there something wrong, Commissioner?" He says, "No, I suppose not. I'm just not used to it yet." He says, "Used to what? To you still being there when I look up." He's demonstrating that Dick isn't quite the enigma that Bruce was as a Batman.
Well, yeah, that was one thing I really liked, actually, from the earlier books of Dick Grayson being Batman was that they were like, they were talking about how he was like trying to do things in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
And it was actually part of the discussion. So yeah, I like that. That's good.
It is, but it's a really well written book and beautifully rendered.
I was quite disappointed that you didn't act out the... I was really expecting you to do the voices and everything there.
I've already done one horrible Batman impression so far this evening. I'm not going to be drawn into another.
I don't think Dick Grayson talks in that... Rah, 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 that way.
Do you not? Do you think he's more sort of a valley kid? Oh, I'm Batman! That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, more Keanu Reeves than in Christian Bale.
Oh! Awesome. Yeah, like that, yeah.
That's like a fourth American accent.
Oh, man, I tell you, I got a lot of shit in that locker.
We should take this shit on the road.
We totally should, because you guys are funny guys.
We are some funny guys.
Go on.
No, no, I wasn't that important. It was a placeholder. You know that I do that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I haven't always worked out what I'm going to say. Sometimes I just do it so that people will stop talking, and then I come up with something. I can't believe I'm admitting this. This is like therapy. I couldn't have this with Jane here.
No, that's true. Well, no, it would be much nicer.
Yes, it would.
Yes. So what are you going to talk about? Because I think I've spoken about Batman for at least 3 hours now, haven't I? Oh, yeah. God, I promise, right, solemnly, no more Batman this year.
Well, there's not much of Batman left.
Not much.
I mean, there's not much of this year left.
There's a shitload of Batman left. Shh, don't tell anyone. Oh yeah, I promise. That's it for Batman for a while.
We should. That's going to be on. That's going to make it onto Bleeding Cool. Someone in the know announces that Batman is over by like the end of December.
I thought
no more Batman.
I thought you said it's going to make it onto Bleeding Cool. That a mediocre comic podcast co-host says he will not talk about Batman again for a long time. Because that
is quite important.
It's Bleeding Cool worthy, isn't it?
I think it is. I think it is. Yeah. You know what? I am totally touching myself right now.
Oh, wicked. Thank you for sharing that with me and our listener.
I can't do that when everyone else is here.
I am picturing listener vomiting right now.
I mean, obviously, there are a few things to talk about. First thing is that my wife was up here checking her emails earlier on, and I passed her Cats Are Weird and More Observations, which is a cat book by Jeffrey Brown. You were there when I bought it a few weeks back, actually.
Yes, that's correct.
Jane talked about Jeffrey Brown's Clumsy.
I miss Jane.
Yeah, I miss Jane too. It's okay, she'll thaw out. She will thaw out, won't she, James?
I hope so.
Yeah, it's Jane spotlighted Jeffrey Brown's Clumsy, which I'd also read.
That's right.
A little while ago. And as far as I'd been aware, that was pretty much what Jeffrey Brown did. Quite heartfelt, but also quite almost shockingly honest and low-key relationship or autobiographical comics.
Uh-huh.
Cats Are Weird is just cute. And the reason I'm mentioning it now, I hadn't intended to mention it, but the reason I mentioned it now is that my wife doesn't read many comics at all, really. And so it was quite nice. I showed her it just because I wasn't sure if she'd seen it, because she doesn't come into this room very often, to be honest. And she sat and leafed through loads of it and was just, like, really giggling at it and thinking it was really cool. And it's just such a lovely book. It's not too expensive. It's in a gorgeous hardback. She said, I like the way the cover feels. So, if... I should have prepared something here. My point is, my wife, who doesn't generally read comics or really understand what all this fuss is about... although, you know, she doesn't think that you and Jane are bad people or anything, just me.
She'd be right in thinking that, though.
She liked Cats Are Weird and More Observations, and so might lots of other people who you wouldn't normally expect to like comics. So, I read a tweet that someone had sent earlier on,
uh-huh,
which was quite funny. I thought was quite funny, saying, this year, for Christmas, why not buy your non-comic reading friends, instead of buying them a comic, buy them something they'll like instead.
I saw that. That was very funny.
Which I just thought was brilliant. But Cats Are Weird, I think, has kind of broad appeal. It's very cute. Everyone likes cats, I think. Or, well, I mean, some people are obviously phobic, and some might be a bit scared of them.
My mother's scared of cats.
Hmm.
I'm not going to buy that comic book for my mother.
No, don't do that.
No, I shouldn't.
And allergies. Some people have allergies.
That's right. She doesn't have allergies. I don't know anyone with allergies. I've got nothing to say about allergies, Nick.
Okay.
Can we move on from allergies?
Yeah. Another thing, literally about 5 minutes ago, John Repian tweeted that there is a book which I actually know nothing about, but it isn't often that I've got TweetDeck open, so I'm quite excited that this is like breaking news.
Yeah.
There's a book called Raise the Dead 2, I guess Volume 2. Issue 1 is out, and there are preview pages of it available online. So if you go to morerepian.com, I guess it'd be the most recent post. It's a zombie comic book. He says, or Bloody Disgusting apparently said, as long as you're not one of the elitists who cannot imagine reading a zombie comic book not penned by Robert Kirkman, then you might just be pleasantly surprised by Dynamite's Raise the Dead 2.
So, Dynamite produce a lot of good comic book stuff, don't they?
Mm, are they the ones doing Moore and Repian's complete series, like the Sherlock Holmes and...
Yep.
They are doing some good
stuff.
The
Boys and the Green Hornet and Vampirella looks intriguing, I think.
Did they do the Lone Ranger book?
I'm not sure.
I really like the Lone Ranger book. Very possibly. That was good.
They've got some really good franchises.
Did you mention The Boys?
Oh, yeah.
You really like The Boys, don't you?
I love The Boys, Nick.
So anyway, that might be worth checking out, but certainly there's a preview online. So go looking for Liam Moore and John Repian's Raise the Dead 2.
Cool.
I haven't read the preview. Don't know if it's any good. Probably is, though. They're generally quite good, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. Very good. Very, very solid pair of writers. Very sound like I'm talking about a footballer.
Yeah, you did that earlier on as well. That's very awesome. Solid. They're good players. I can't even pretend to do a football
commentator. I've got a brain full of mush today, to be honest with you. I do feel like I'm swimming in marmalade, and I think actually my brain defaults to idiot footballer just to protect itself. Well, you know, Gary, I enjoyed the comic. It was, put in a lot of effort. You know, it gave 110%, I thought.
Started out a little bit weak, but pulled it off in the... You see, again, I can't even do it.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, kind of gave you... it was a poor first half, kind of gave her in the second half quite nicely, and I thought, deservedly, we got the winner right towards the end.
you did, over the course of the Thought Bubble weekend, you were, on form and sounded like a normal person for almost the whole thing. But there's a bit when you're in the... we were doing the dancing thing, and you're watching David Wynn do a drawing.
Yeah.
And you can't really hear it on the video, but he gets to the end, he puts his pen down, and you say something like, "Show us what you've done, David!"
What's wrong with that? That's perfectly acceptable.
It was brilliant. It was like Ray Winston. It's like we had Ray Winston doing it. It was brilliant.
I'd had a few to drink by then as well, don't forget.
I was on orange juice all night.
Yeah, fucking were you. Stuffed full of vodka.
Should we go over to Max?
Yes, let's go over to Max.
We keep saying... Well, we'll wait for a natural pause and we'll drop this stuff in and people will just appreciate the change in. But then we always announce it anyway, because otherwise you wouldn't know that I'm about to do it. So go over to Max, we'll come back here, talk a bit more about some comics. How does that sound?
Nice. I'll see you after the half-time oranges.
Max Barnard, Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Snow for everyone. So yeah, there's snow everywhere, and all of it is preventing me from getting any new comics this week. So instead of a normal 2-minute insubstantial review for me, you get a rant. which I apologise in advance, because most of it will be irrational and misinformed. And what is this rant about, pray tell? It's about comic companies and their feeble attempts to bring in new readers. I know, exciting, but bear with me, there's logic behind all this somewhere. Somewhere. Oh, and when I say comic companies, I mean Marvel. See, there are two things Marvel have been doing to draw in new readers. The new Astonishing line of titles and their upcoming Point One initiative. Both of these attempts have a sincere effort behind them, but have massive stumbling blocks, either created by circumstance or just a plain lack of common sense. But I should tackle these one at a time, lest I seem utterly raving mad about this stuff, which I am. First up, the Astonishing line. The whole point of this new line is to recapture the same sense of public recognition that Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men managed, with a similarly continuity-light approach, getting some money in through new readers in bookstores and in local comic book stores. Which is admirable, if nothing else. Now, the problems occur when you use a little bit of the old common sense. It's all good and well to want to pull in readers who don't already buy Marvel comics, and a line where people know to look for the word astonishing to know it's suitable is fine. But will they know about this fact when the books come out? All Astonishing series so far have been bi-monthly titles, one every 2 months, leaving a sizable gap before those crucial trade paperbacks appear in bookstores, which really shines an issue when you look at how long ago the initial mainstream hype was, which was back in May, and, you know, we have no book releases yet. People will not remember this. The common man is a very forgetful beast, including me. What am I on about? Sorry, that was an awful joke. I'm going to delete that. Really, that angle would have functioned better if the line were a bunch of original graphic novels, straight to bookstores with a high amount of hype, like the notably successful Superman Earth 1, which did the whole continuity-free thing as a means to draw new readers as well. As for the new readers in the comic book store approach, there really aren't that many new readers to be found in that venue anymore. Depressing, sure. But occasionally new people wander in. You can always capture people who've lapsed out of a title with hype. But as a general rule, the mainstream comic issue buying public never really grows. And when you're marketing a new title at them at your higher price, you can't really expect the people going to jump at it. So what we got are new titles to come out once every 2 months. That only somewhere between 25 and 40,000 people are actually buying, at least until the trade releases come out. This isn't a successful marketing strategy. Oh, and that continuity-free thing, so far it applies to precisely one of the three Astonishing titles out there, Spider-Man and Wolverine, and that series truly deserves the bookstore success that the Astonishing approach is supposed to bring. As does the new Astonishing X-Men Xenogenesis by Warren Ellis. The new Thor title does not. And the latter of those two have continuity issues up the wazoo! X-Men relies on you knowing that House of M happened, an event from 5 years ago, and Thor relies on you knowing about Siege, the blockbuster event from the start of the year. That expectation is probably more reasonable when I think about it, but still, I'm moaning somewhat irrationally, so bleh. Sorry, I'm just getting on rage filled now, so I'm going to take a break. Be right back or something. Okay, a little bit calmer. Albeit angry at the difficulties of recording software. So I'll try to speed up and make more sense with this bit about Marvel's upcoming initiative, Point One. Now, this is all a lot simpler. Marvel are releasing special issues of popular series from February onwards. I can't say February. From February onwards, with a point one after the previous issue's number, so that you know that the issue is one of their special jumping on points for the series, ideal for newcomers and, yes, lapsed fans. And as a bonus, if it's a point one for a series that regularly retails at $4, then the point one issue is just
$3.
I know! Fantastic! Seems a pretty simple idea to raise readership of their mainstream titles. Or it's just a really good idea, marred by some exceedingly obvious issues. First and foremost, the whole point one part. When you see a comic with a point one after the issue number, do you A, assume that it's a special version of the displayed issue number, B, think it's a special continuation of said issue, or C, realise that it's basically a special issue one type affair made for you, the person who does not already read this series? If you answered A or B, chances are you're the people at Marvel pursuing with this initiative. You see the issue here? You can't expect this whole point one on the issue number thing to make sense to people straight off, and have to rely on the comic book store or the internet to inform people of it. And let's be honest, not everyone who goes into a comic book store goes onto Comic Book Resources or Newsarama, and not every comic book store is going to have employees or managers who give that much of a damn about people that aren't themselves. But perhaps that bit's just a pessimist in me talking. The second issue worth highlighting is pretty subtle, but just as important. These point one issues come out in the same month as the regular issues of the series, meaning, for example, that Amazing Spider-Man will go from two issues a month to
three,
which in itself isn't bad. I mean, it was released
three
times a month for Brand New Day. But here's the issue. A lot of people who buy comics aren't exactly flush with money. Not the regular readers of these titles, they suddenly have to spend an extra
$3
in the corresponding month to keep atop of the important events promised inside these point one issues, could be enough to encourage them to not bother with the title at all, especially if they're regular readers of multiple series involved in this initiative. Again, pessimism, but a very likely reality nonetheless. This just grates with me. I love Marvel. It's fair to say that I proportionately own 5 Marvel comics to every DC title. And as such, I really don't want to see Marvel make the sort of stupid decisions that'll wank away the company's position as number one. Saying that, nothing will really manage to top it from the top of the comic industry. For every person who fits into descriptions in this rant, or people like myself, there's still a lot of people who don't give a shit and buy comics anyway. And that's fine. But it doesn't stop either of these two initiatives having these huge flaws that can only lead to negative things. But enough of me moaning. You're here for the Momcast people, and I'm sure they're all done with their croissants and cola by now, or whatever they consume. So I'll bugger off to yell at a wall or something in that description. Ta-ta!
Three.
Max is half-time oranges.
You're half-time oranges.
Thank you for that, Max. James and I will listen to that afterwards. This is like the wonder of technology means that we literally received this file from him as we were recording, so we haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Yeah, cheers, Max.
Thank you, you're awesome.
Don't tell him that, he might start saying libelous things, taking advantage of us.
I get the feeling he probably already has.
Oh, God.
Can I just clear something up? I did not say that George Beedham is a cockhead.
No.
I did not say that.
George Beedham is most certainly not a cockhead. George Beedham's a fine gentleman and an excellent comicker.
I said he had a cocked head.
A cocked head.
Yep. He on the video, he does... there's like the ultimate angle of cuteness. The ultimate degree of cuteness. Animals know it.
Yeah.
When they cock the head to one side and you'll just do anything for them.
That's quite right.
And George was doing that, that's all. Yeah. I thought he looked cute.
Oh.
And drew attention to it. And now he's saying I'm slandering him across the internet. This could be the next big feud, you know.
Oh, I do hope not.
The next big comic feud.
To be fair, if you two have a feud, I'm siding with him, so...
I wouldn't blame you.
Yeah. I'm so fucking loyal.
this week, I have been catching up on, I've been reading the second volume of 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa. I've mentioned it briefly, I picked up the first volume of this at the same time as I picked up the other series by him that's based on Atom Boy Pluto, which is all robots. I did a spotlight on it and Jane didn't like it very much because she's scared of robots.
Of course.
20th Century Boys, are only halfway through the volume, but it continues to be great. It's basically a kind of a mystery about a group of friends who meet when they're really young and sort of form a club. And that story's being told at the same time as the present day, where sinister things are happening. They're all like all the guys who were originally friends are like all in their, I guess, late 20s or 30s or something. And there's weird stuff happening that may or may not revolve around this enigmatic cult. But one of them recognizes a symbol that the cult uses as being
sorry,
a symbol
about
that the cult. That's all right, it's fine. Recognise a symbol that the cult uses as being something that they remember from their past. But it's a great comic. A lot of the mystery in the book comes out of the fact that their memories of being kids, because it's a long time has passed, their memories are a little bit sketchy, so they're trying to piece together their past, really, at the same time. But it's just really nice human story that's happening, with potential for massive conspiracy later. And intrigue and stuff, but it's just great stuff. I wanted to mention it because I have read it this week. Earlier today, I read I Kill Giants, which
is this
thought,
on your, you read this on your snow day?
Yes, yes. Well, literally in the half hour, no, the hour before we started recording. No, the hour before we started to record. So about 2 hours before we started recording.
Fresh in your mind, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. I Kill Giants is written by Joe Kelly and is with art by J.M. Ken Nimura. And I bought it a little while ago, actually, but I've only just managed to get around to reading it. I was expecting it to be quite heavy going, reading it before we recorded today. But actually, it wasn't. It follows the story of a girl... Let's actually see, because I was never entirely clear on how old she was. She's obviously supposed to be pretty young. Fifth grade, I think. What is that in human years?
Fifth grade?
Yeah.
70.
70. So yeah. She's 70 years old,
yeah.
So still really young.
Yeah.
she's called Barbara... I'm not sure what her surname is, but it's not really relevant. It does come up. She's called Barbara, and she's at school, and she's quite a prickly kid. She's like this little lass with really big glasses who is kind of accidentally disruptive at school, really. She's not interested in school, so she keeps getting into trouble. She doesn't really have any friends. The friends she does have are quite geeky. And... she lives at home with her sister and her brother and parents who are not really mentioned through most of the book. And her excuse for being disruptive at school and constantly being in with the principal is that school's not really important for her. She's already got her job, her vocation, which is killing giants, which she has an encyclopedic knowledge of. Barbara's like, she's very... Some of her dialogue is actually brilliant because she's just such a cocky kid, really. But she has problems, you know, she has problems with bullies and stuff. A lot of the book takes place at school, okay? Mm-hmm. And at some point she makes friends with a new girl called Sophia. Well, actually, as is quite often the case in this, she doesn't really make friends with the girl. The girl makes friends with her, and it's quite a lovely sort of peculiar little friendship that happens. It's very cute. At the same time, there's something going on with the upstairs in Barbara's house, which she's really scared of for some reason. The thing is that you're never entirely sure for the majority of the book. Well, you're never really sure, to be honest, whether or not Barbara is really seeing all of the things that she claims she's seeing,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not she actually does kill giants, or if she's just either disturbed or actually mentally ill. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few sequences where she's talking to the school psychologist who takes an interest in her and wants to wants to try and work out why she's having so much trouble at school. Anything else I'd say about the book, about the actual plot of the book, would kind of ruin the experience of reading it yourself, I think. And it's a book that I think people really, really should read. The relationships in it are brilliant. For a lot of the book, it feels like Barbara lives in a really hostile world, or her way of dealing with the world makes it really hostile. You know, she's not
sure.
She's not very nice to most people. I think at one point she says that she's not very nice to stupid people, and most people are stupid. Sort of thing. She's an unlikely protagonist, basically, because she is quite difficult to get on with. But throughout, there are moments of where you can sort of tell there's something else going on with her character, that she's dealing with something other than literal giants. I flinch at saying she's dealing with figurative giants. But she's obviously troubled, you know. That was good. Yeah. That was almost proper, like, proper reviewing, wasn't it?
This is good. This is a little bit like Newsnight Review without the pretentious people. Oh, no. Oh, no, we're here. Sorry.
Nimura's art is bizarre, actually. It's really expressionistic and stylized, and he uses a really minimal amount of detail to pick out the story. The acting of the, you know, the way the characters act, their mannerisms, and the way action or activity is dealt with, I don't know if this was the first thing he did, but it's just handled in a really peculiar way. And I have to be honest, having finished the book, I just wanted to put it in the hands of anyone, whether they read comics or not, because it's that sort of a story. I can't see anybody not being moved by it or excited or wanting to know what's going on. But when I first read it, my first response to it was that most people wouldn't be able to get over the art, because it is quite expressive, it is quite expressionistic, and it, on first reading, it felt like I had to get used to the art before I could really work out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because there's so little detail. The funny thing is, now I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at the first few pages. As I talk, I'm looking at the first few pages that I'd had so much, you know, that it had actually been an effort to pass in the first place, and thinking, no one would have a problem with reading this. Mm-hmm. So either the book itself, either the art itself has, like, totally got into my head, and now I can read it with absolutely no problems, or you get used to it very, very quickly. There are moments in this book, while I was reading it downstairs, where I kind of went, duh, and felt all cute and warm. And there were other moments, especially towards the end, but not exclusively towards the end of the book, where I was kind of glad that I had to read it fairly quickly for this evening, because there were sequences in it, not just at the reveal point, but at various points where Barbara has, especially with Barbara's friendship with her friend Sophie, and some of the moments with the psychologist, where I thought, if I was taking my time with this, or if I was reading it in single issues, I would probably be crying my eyes out at this exact point. It's just absolutely beautiful. The subject matter is not... I flinch from saying it's not like anything else out there, because there are other books that handle, like, young protagonists, and the whole Minx range kind of fitted into a similar sort of model to this. Yeah. Well, not all of it, but a lot of the Minx range did. But it's rare enough. It's rare enough that it's exceptional. It's absolutely beautiful, James. It's absolutely an absolutely lovely story. There's no real superheroics. There are fantasy elements to them, but as I said, they're like just potentially going on in someone's head fantasy elements. There's a sort of a basic intrigue. While you want to know how the story is going to unfold, because it isn't obvious from the beginning. And there are some big wow moments, and there are some big sort of oh my god moments.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Really, really liked it.
Sounds like you did. It sounds like a cliche to say, I've heard such good things about it, and I desperately want to read it. I think I'm really disappointed I'm not there, because it's one of those, listening to you talk about it, I wish I was there flicking through it right now, but it's definitely a book I want to read.
I like you, I'd heard a lot about it. And I did see it while it was on the shelf, but it was a few issues in, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to get hold of the other issues. I've been putting off reading it because I wasn't, you know, I didn't know if it had necessarily live up to what everyone had been saying about it, but it really is. It's probably the best book, the best, most satisfying comic reading experience I've had, certainly in the last few months, but possibly this year so far.
Mm.
It isn't often that you can say that about something without reservation, so...
No, that's exciting to be able to say.
Hmm. It's good.
So you'd give it 5 stars?
I would give it 5 stars. Out of how many?
8.
No, I think I'd give it 10 out of 8.
Whee!
It's a good book. It really is good.
Cool.
It's a bit late in the day to be saying it, because it has been out for a little while, but you should still be able to get it on Amazon or somewhere like that. It's just beautiful. Or your local comic emporium.
Yes, they're always a good place to buy comic books from.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they are.
Thank you, Nick.
That's me done. I think that's it. I can't think of anything else comic related to say.
Nor can I.
What do we normally do when we run out of things to say?
I don't know. We usually look at Jane and expect her to segue us into something else.
Have you got any plans for the rest of the week? I'm guessing you can't really know what you're going to do until you know what the weather's going to do, can you?
I think we're going to be okay by the weekend, but I've got a very quiet pre-Christmas weekend planned. Might put some decorations up, you never know.
Ooh, it's that time, isn't it?
It is that time.
I haven't got any of my Christmas presents yet.
No, nor have I. I haven't got a single one.
I don't know if you're in the same situation that I am, but one thing about getting married was I can kind of rely on my wife to get all of the presents except her ones,
yes.
The ones I'm getting for her. And
the ones you probably need the most help with as well.
Yeah, because she's like just better at sorting out, like making sure everyone's got presents and stuff. It's not just because she's the wife.
No.
This isn't a traditional gender roles thing.
It is though, isn't it?
It is though, yeah really. it just happens to be the case. It happens to be true that she's better at it. But I haven't got a clue what I'm going to get her. I've got a couple of things. I've got a couple of presents in the offing, but it's not going to be the whole thing, and I haven't got that one unifying thing that brings all of the other, because we get each other a few gifts at Christmas.
Mm.
You know, I suppose I'm supposed to get something for the dogs as well, aren't I?
Normally my lovely wife Nicola would do that for our dogs. She really does get everything except her own stuff.
Okay.
We have exactly the same gender roles.
Did I mention that where the puppy, Willow, has a cone on her head? She's got one of those lampshades. Did I mention that?
You didn't, mate.
I don't think I did. She has one of those lampshades, and this is her first snow.
Mm.
It happens to also be the first time the other dog, Anya, has really seen snow to this extent. But so we were kind of hoping that Willow, if she did see snow, wouldn't be debilitated to the point where she had, because she's been spayed this week. Well, they took the stuff out,
uh-huh,
and they stitched her up.
Yes.
And thus far, everything's going okay.
Good.
But she's back to her normal self, which means we're having to constantly, like, hold her in place or stick her in her crate so that she doesn't, like, split her stitches.
Yeah.
But, so, I don't know. The thing is, she's quite a short dog.
Yes.
And the snow is quite deep.
It is, yeah.
And she's got a lampshade round her head. And she likes sniffing things. So basically, when she wanders around the garden, she keeps going to sniff things, and the lampshade just scoops up some snow, which she then has to shake. So the process of her going around the garden is literally stop, scoop up a load of stuff, shake her head so that it all flies around, and it's just brilliant to watch. Everyone should get a puppy.
I agree, but only if you've got laminate floors.
Yeah, a puppy with laminate floors, and then when it becomes full grown, when it becomes a full grown dog, get rid of it. I mean, give it to someone, give it to an orphan or something, or you know, someone will really benefit from it, and get a new puppy. That's my recommendation.
I agree. I hope it comes across. I don't, because you've laughed a couple of times and I cough. I literally, when I've been coughing, taking my headset, moving it to one side, coughing into my hand, looking away from it. I'm taking it that it's really not having that much effect in terms of what you can hear.
No, not at all. The thing is that because I'm not sure if you're hearing me, I'm pausing when you go away. So your whole effort for trying to minimise the impact on the listener is spoiled by me finding it really important that you hear the the puerile.
I can still hear you, just
worthless
about.
Nonsense can, coming out of my mouth hole.
I can hear what's going on, it's fine, sort of.
Oh, but so that's, I think this weekend is mainly going to be watching the puppy. around in the snow. I kind of hope we get more snow, just so I can keep laughing at her ridiculous situation.
Most of our weekends revolve around looking at the baby, so that's fair enough.
But there's no point at which you're going to be sticking her in a lampshade. I cannot think of anything less dignified.
I doubt we'll do that. I can't imagine how weird and dark the weekend would have to get for that to be something we end up doing.
I just talked about dignity while discussing a breed of animal that like eats fox shit. So
I quite enjoyed, actually, because we met at the weekend to take our dogs for a walk. I did quite enjoy it when that couple stopped and asked us what breed of dog it was, and you were trying to be polite and I just shouted cockhound.
That was brilliant.
I rather enjoyed that.
You're brilliant. It's like having a big slightly slow
it's a cockhound.
Slow nephew or something around with me.
Good, thank you.
It's brilliant. I think that's it. I think we're done.
It is.
On that bombshell.
Yeah. I hope this held together for the listener. without our friend Jane. It's been really weird, just the two of us, and doing it over Skype. It's been quite odd for me. So
I think we're always a little bit worried that she's gonna get annoyed with us and kill us.
I think so. I just think she's a class act, and she classes up the pod, doesn't she? That's what it is.
No, I know how it'd go. She'd wander downstairs with our still warm blood on her hands.
Yeah.
Because she's classy, so she wouldn't use a weapon.
No.
And my wife downstairs would say, "Oh, well, where are the other two?" And Jane would say, "They just went too far and I killed them." And my wife would say, "Oh, okay, do you want a cup of tea?"
And then they would kiss.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I forgot that bit.
Now, on that bombshell.
On that bombshell, I think it's time to go. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
So smart then, in your jacket and coat, my softest red scarf was warming your throat. Winter was on us at the end of my nose, and I never loved England more. But a friend of mine says it's good to hear that you believe in love, even if set in fear. Well, I'll hold you there, brother, and sit you straight. I only believe true love is frail and willing to break. I will come back here, bring me back when I'm old. I want you late, forever in the cold. I might be cold, but I'm just skin and bones, and I never love England more than I'm covered in snow. I wrote my name in your book, only God knows why. And I bet you that he cracked a smile. And I'm clearing all the crap out of my room, trying desperately to figure out what it is that makes me blue. And I wrote an epic letter to you, and it's 22 pages front and back, but it's too good to be used. And I tried to be a girl who likes to, I'm too good for that. There's a mind under this hat, and I called them all and told them I've got to move. I'm out now, it's too hard. I'm on my own, it's too hard. Feel like running, feel jacket and coat. My softest red scarf was warming your throat. Winter will leave us, left the end of my nose. A goodbye, old England, until next year's snow.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have earphones on?
Yes. Is it obvious? Am I shouting?
No, we're just both just sitting here in earphones feeling silly. They're pinching my head a little bit, I have to say.
These are very comfortable. Are you using the big bins?
Yeah, that's... Okay. Do they stretch? Hang on.
Ugh. They're fucking shit is what they are.
They're working. They are fit for purpose.
Good.
Have we ever done it, just the two of us?
Right.
I mean, the podcast.
No, sex, yes, the podcast. No, I think this is the first time with just two of us, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit nerve-wracking. We do it differently loads, don't we? We keep doing it different ways.
It is. Yeah, I like doing it different ways. It keeps it fresh, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It means that we're never divorced, Nick.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, shall I make that loud noise I was talking about?